Mess. Barry Yergrau has a new book out called Mess. And it's really about hoarding and putting not just your house, but yourself in order. And he's on with us right now from Queens. Hi, Barry. Are you in the apartment mentioned in the book?
I am.
You are?
Yep.
And looking around you now, what does it look like to you? What do you see?
Well, to be honest with you, here's the honest thing, Mike. It actually is what I call functionally decluttered. But I had I was listening to your monologue, and I realized I should tell you that I've gotten rid of a lot of his stuff here, but I got this tremendous deal on these Scott Walker bobblehead dolls, Scott Walker for president. So now I have like 400 Scott Walker bobbleheads.
I'll take them all.
No, but here's the deal.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get them to form a union, and they refuse. So if I just say union to them, if I just go union, they all shrink back against the wall and try to get out of the apartment. So I could actually get rid of them by just saying union, and they'll all leave the apartment.
We'll see if they march out of your Queens apartment.
No, indeed.
This is the one that you could not take your girlfriend to, even though it had been her apartment before, right?
Right. Well, what happens, we have a little compound here. We have our own little Hyannis Porter that isn't a dated reference. And she lives around the corner in her place, and I use her old place as my sort of writing studio, and I keep my stuff here.
Yes.
And in a few years ago, I'd say sometime in the late aughts, it got very, very messy.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want her in here. I didn't want anybody in here, actually.
Yeah. Did no one visit you in that interregnum?
No, they didn't. I mean, don't forget, it's also a writing studio. So writers aren't people who, like, you know, it's a private place. That's part of it. But also, it got to the point where it wasn't a sociable place. I didn't want people to see it.
Now, wait a second. You say you write in your private place?
Yes.
I can tell from your writing, actually, to tell you the truth. Sounded like Private Place was writing it.
Actually, I wrote a book called The Sadness of Sex.
I know.
Which came from a private place, I would say.
Okay. I was just fooling around, you know.
No. So was I.
Okay, good. Should we continue to, or should we get serious here for a moment about
it? Mike, let's go for it.
Were you aware of having a psychiatric disorder?
Excuse me?
Well, it is now, isn't it? Isn't hoarding a psychiatric disorder, or is it not?
Yeah, but don't forget, I mean, hoarding is like a condition which is, when it gets extreme, it becomes a quote-unquote psychiatric disorder. Mm-hmm. But the use of that term is, I mean, what isn't a psych... I mean...
I agree. You know, no, I agree.
But I was aware that I'd gotten into a real mess, and I was aware that I needed to do something. And my girlfriend tried to... one day showed up unexpectedly, and I wouldn't let her in. She had left her keys at her house. So she got a glimpse over my shoulder, and she said, you know what, whoa. She had no idea it was like this, actually, because I'm very fastidious when we travel a lot.
Yeah, you are.
So she gave me an ultimatum and said, you know, you need to clean up here and declutter not just this, but your life. And being a writer, I decided to turn it into a project. Yeah?
But why didn't you tell her to get lost? You know, it's been good. But, you know, and why? It obviously wasn't a problem for you, right? Now, because in the book there, I noticed that, and I don't mean you should have told that to her. I'm just saying, you know, devil's advocate. But why is it any of her
trouble?
No, why is it any of her business? And it wasn't a problem for you, and you are a writer, and you did say a wonderful thing in the book about you buy something and it becomes an art object, and you save it, right?
Right. Well, what happened was that I also had gotten to that point where I was hanging on to, like, plastic grocery bags so that my place looked like a tumbleweed set in a Roy Rogers movie. Roy Rogers, by the way, I discovered was something of a pack rat.
No kidding.
And I also had, classically for this people in this situation, I had a lot of empty liquor store boxes that I was going to use when I was cleaning up my place but never somehow got around. So the cleaning up equipment became part of what needed to be cleaned up.
The question is, did you empty the boxes yourself before using them?
No, I brought... Yes, of course. And had merry old time. But when you say you didn't have a problem, I didn't have a problem with it, why did I go ahead with it? I did have a problem with it.
Okay.
I mean, I knew I was I mean, I'm not a guy who likes living among, you know, I don't like living among mess. I like my objects, but I don't like living among mess.
So there's a conflict there, another disorder.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a.
You have a host of social disorders. Let's call them social disorders. Did you know that, though? Did you think you did? I mean, you didn't think you did, right? So maybe you didn't, is what I'm saying. Because you proceeded with your work and your writing, but you just had a lot of stuff around you. You know, it's like the George Carlin thing. Like, it's all about stuff. You know, your stuff is good. Everybody else's stuff is crap. You know.
Yeah, or there's a wonderful psychoanalyst who writes about this clutter said, when it's mine, it's clutter. When it's yours, it's mess. You know, so
right.
Yes, so there's a
difference. I like Carlin's take better, but that's good, too.
It's funny. I like the psychoanalyst better, but you know what? It's different strokes for different folks. You know what I'm saying? No, but I understand your point, yeah. And eventually I got to that point, but I was living in a situation where it clearly was representative of an internal state, and I will say why it came. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always liked objects. I liked when we travel getting ephemera, but we'd had a big health scare with my girlfriend, and it was a trauma, mm-hmm. I mean, for want of a better word. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it worked out great, you know, thank God, but it really was a shock all the way around, a deep one. Mm-hmm. And it set off other traumas I'd had in my life, and I think what my hoarding as it developed then became a response to that, which is often how hoarding operates.
Oh.
And I consider myself a low-level hoarder, I'm not someone who would be, I'd disappoint you if you wanted to watch hoarding television and you came to my place at its worst.
Yeah.
But still, it needed attending to.
So you didn't hoard before then?
I always liked things, and I was always very attached to objects. You know, I'm one of those people who's sentimental about objects, who likes having objects around, you know. Yeah. And my girlfriend is a food critic who we travel the world together, going to the fanciest places and all the top chefs and all.
Yeah.
And I like bringing back little ephemera. I bring back postcards. I bring back tourist travel things. I'm sentimental, so I like
books,
having them around.
Matchbooks from all the restaurants.
Not quite that. I'm not a matchbook guy, but I'm a big postcard guy. I'm staring now at the 2008 calendar from Madrid, Bullfighters of the Year. It's 2008. It's hanging on my
wall. That's great.
And you know what? Let me segue just quickly.
Go ahead, yeah.
Because I know radio is all about segue, no?
I don't know. I don't really do radio. I just do this.
I'm sorry, what show is this again?
I forget. This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
No, I was thinking, you know what?
I'm
make
Bob
a joke,
Sable.
But I don't want to lose track of my thought. So Hemingway, speaking about bullfighters, turns out to be, I'm going to be writing about this too, turns out to be a huge pack rat and a hoarder, a paper hoarder.
Yeah.
Hemingway kept all his old documents, all his old postcards, Christmas cards, what
he
have
did.
You. I mean, he really was a pack rat.
Yeah. Is that true? And I noticed that you mentioned a lot of the Russian writers in the book. And is that true?
Gogol,
yeah. One of my favorite of all time, by the way. The nose.
There you go.
The nose for me was a change of life.
The nose changed your life.
It changed my nose. I didn't have a nose before
nose
I read
knows.
Nose. There's a guy's nose actually runs away from his face.
Exactly.
And he's looking for it all over Leningrad, wherever he is.
Exactly.
I thought, God, I felt like I had that experience. You know what I mean? When you read, but was he a pack rat as well? Were the Russian writers, were they hoarders? Is that a tradition?
What he was interesting was he was a glutton, even though he was a slender little guy.
Oh.
But he was a glutton. But his writing shows off his writing is kind of like a hoarded writing. It's just full of detail, full of detail, full of detail.
So he hoards
but
details.
His portrait of a guy, Plyushkin, is considered really, is probably the first real hoarder.
Yeah, Plyushkin. Yeah, that's
Plyushkin.
The guy. And he was the hoarder then in Gogol.
Yeah, and that's the name of the condition that's used in Russia, Plyushkin's disorder, for people who just, you know.
It's not.
I don't know what they use. I don't know what term they use for people who hoard noses, but that's a different thing.
Is it really Plyushkin's disorder?
Yeah. Plyushkin syndrome or something.
Really? Seriously?
I'm sorry?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to use this in conversation at a cocktail party if I ever go to one.
You do that.
Better be accurate. And I know you're friends with let's see, who did the blurb on your book here? Lots of people did. I guess he's not on.
Well, not all blurbers are friends, right?
Steingart.
Yeah, Gary Steingart. Yeah.
Is he a friend of yours? Is he like a drinking buddy or something?
Not quite a drinking buddy, but we've had our drinks. Yeah. I know him. Yeah, he's a very sweet guy.
Yeah, and he's Russian.
He also is, as everybody knows, a wonderful blurb machine.
I know. We had him on here for his book, and he was blurbing. He was willing to blurb me, and I didn't have a book.
No.
That's a condition. There's a disorder.
I think he was born blurbing. Yeah, you're right, actually.
Born to blurb.
You're right. You know, this is radio, so
Yes.
It's radio. I won't say what I was going to say. That's all right. Let's move on.
Okay. Let me go on with some of this. All right. Where were we? Oh, and, you know, the Melissa Clark thing, too. They asked her about buy the book, and she mentioned, what book is on your nightstand? She said yours. How did that feel?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, she's lovely. She is a friend she's a food writer, and my girlfriend's a chum of hers. What's nice about Melissa, who writes about food so much, is she's also was trained as in a writing program. You know, she's a regular writer.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah. So you aren't by her on her bedstead there. She didn't say she was reading it, but it's sitting
metaphorically,
there.
Metaphorically, Mike.
So I meant, what did you mean?
I see you try to stir the pot, don't you?
Well, she's a food writer, isn't she? Come on.
You do want to peer in the door, don't you? You do want to see what's going on behind the...
I want to be you, Barry, because, you know, you've got a lot of cool friends.
But you know what?
Your apartment's really cool, and you got a girlfriend who doesn't necessarily live with you all the time. That's only ideal.
Well, I mean, actually, it reminded me of there's a great French story where a guy said his guy has a wife and a mistress, and the wife dies, and the people say, "Oh, great, now you can be with your mistress all the time." And the guy said, "Yeah, but where will I spend my evenings?" Anyway, that's kind of a French joke.
I'm sorry, we don't have a drummer here for a rim shot on that. Let me segue to something else here. I want to do a segue here. Okay. Clutter versus hoarding versus collecting. First of all, did you actually go to Collectors or Clutterers Anonymous, whatever that's called?
Yeah. But I mean, I went to for the project. Decided to explore the whole wider range, not just hopefully then use that wisdom back here. Mm-hmm. So I went to Clutterers Anonymous, it's a 12-step program for people who have clutter issues and hoarding issues.
Yeah.
I didn't quite relate to it, and part of the reason I didn't was because you couldn't comment, right? In AA or 12-step, you don't comment on other people. Mm. You let them test. They have their little valley, and then you have your little valley. Mm. But there are peer groups that they have now, and I really encourage anybody who has these serious issues, and I would say 2 to 3% of the country of the United States probably has hoarding issues, if not extreme clutter issues.
Yeah.
And I would say that going to a peer group where you meet with people and you can comment on other people, I mean, supportively, but it's an incredibly poignant and touching experience. So that was very useful. Mm. And then, I went along with professional declutterers. I met this wonderful old, well-known, actually, salty old dude who was like this, you remember Red Adair who fights oil fires, this roughneck? Well, he was that way about clutter. So, and my girlfriend wanted him to come in and help me declutter here. I said, there's no way I want some guy who thinks he's Red Adair to come into my little apartment and start monkeying with my postcards. Thank you.
No.
So, if you know what I mean. So, but then I went along on a hoarding job with him, and then I got to spend time in England with the UK's most extreme hoarder, a guy named Richard Wallace, and that was an experience.
Yeah, what was that? What was that like?
He lives in some of these hoarded places actually look like art installations. They're so extreme and so metaphorically suggestive. This guy, at his worst, the Channel 4 did a documentary, and it was shown here. And it was a gentle documentary, not like those freak shows on Hoarders TV.
Yeah.
And he lived in a house that was so piled high with newspapers that up to a foot under the ceiling, he had to crawl, belly crawl under his ceiling just to enter his house. And when I got there, he'd come about halfway, with the help of his neighbor named Andy Honey, a gardener.
Uh-huh.
He had brought stuff down to, in most places, it was about shoulder level. But it was I've never seen anything like it. It was like being in an Alice in Wonderland environment.
And the papers, were they just all Were they collected for a reason? I mean, was there a reason?
He thought of himself as a collector and an archivist. But
archivist.
The thing is this.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of these people, a lot of people who hoard think they're collecting, and they have a certain sensitivity to objects and so on. Mm-hmm. So that the leading psychologist in hoarding, this guy, wonderful guy named Randy Frost, who I spent time with, he admires hoarders. He said they're almost like artists. The trouble is, to make art, you need to be able to edit, and hoarders can't edit. They just, resist editing.
Oh.
So,
well, that's interesting.
But,
interesting point. And did he declutter this Richard?
With the help of this his gardener, who then has now become a professional declutterer, they both became sort of celebrities. I mean, what was weird was that the newspapers he kept were the Daily Mail, which is like the most rubbishy paper in the world, practically. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's a bit like hoarding the New York Post. It's like, why would you want to keep even one copy? You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, I mean, his plan was to scan it all into a computer eventually, but he didn't have a computer, you know. So,
yeah. And he couldn't find it. Well, he probably had one, but he couldn't find it.
As a matter of fact, you're absolutely right. You were there. I thought you sounded familiar, Mike.
I had one here, but it's a Commodore, and it's under about 40 years.
You were peering through the door.
Yeah.
Again, what?
No, I would just imagine if that were me, I would have one, but I wouldn't be able to find it. That's all.
Well, tell me this.
I save things that I think are significant. Lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think they're significant. Travel the show or whatever. Save a bunch of stuff. And then you kind of lower your standards for significance after a while,
mm-hmm,
till it gets really low. So you say napkins that you drew a face on, and.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So like,
don't you have a napkin thing, or didn't you have a napkin thing?
Yes, but I'm a little more discriminating, although maybe not. I mean, I have napkins from Borges' favorite cafe in Buenos Aires.
Barry. You can just hold your breath there. It doesn't interest me at all what his favorite restaurant is. I mean, he's a good writer. But this is said a picture that I drew on it of a little face or something. So, but I don't know. Stuff like that.
Well, that's...
That's sort of what you said you did, didn't you? You kind of lowered your standards for what's collectible, really.
Well, what do you mean lowered standards? I mean,
I
mean, everything is interesting if you want to make it interesting. Although, as one commentator on this said, the trouble with souvenirs is nobody's interested in other people's souvenirs.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, oh, don't tell me your dreams. They bore me. My dreams are fascinating.
Yeah. It's like stuff. It's like the Carlin thing about stuff, Your stuff as opposed to my stuff. By the way, you also said that... like flying in a plane or something. The house is just your stuff with a lid on it. George Carlin.
Yeah.
All right, so you don't
I
always like George Carlin. That's great.
Let me
ask you this now. You declutter.
Mm.
Has it, A, helped your relationship, and B, has it hurt your writing? Because it seems to me that being surrounded by all these things somehow gets into your writing.
Yeah, it does. You know what? All good questions. And let me think about them, and I'll drop you an email. Okay?
That's fine, really. That's fine. That's a good answer. Right?
No, I'll text you.
Okay. That's cool.
Now, eventually, I don't want to give the book away, but my girlfriend was a great aid in actually getting me to declutter.
Can we say her name, by the way? Because my girlfriend doesn't sound that good.
Yeah, well, I had fun in the book, and I called her by all these pseudonyms. I called her Cosima and then whatever. I actually wanted to
Prunella,
start calling...
Prunella, I saw.
Prunella, because it's Prunella Scales, who was who played Basil Fawlty's wife in...
Fawlty Towers.
In Fawlty Towers.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to give her a pseudonym of Brunhilde to start with, but people thought that was a little... But her name is Anja von Bremsen. She's a wonderful writer, and she wrote she's a well-known food writer, and she also wrote a great memoir about her. She's from Moscow, and she wrote a great memoir of the Soviet experience told through food.
So mm-hmm. Well, that sounds
mastering
great.
The art of Soviet cooking.
I have to pick that up.
But anyway, so Anja,
so that's good.
Cosima,
it's good with her. It really helped.
No,
you're solid
I mean, it took a while. It took longer than it needed, and I would, fall off the wagon and so on. But you understand, I'm not a minimalist. I don't know if you know who Marie Kondo is, this Japanese art of tidying up.
No, I don't.
Sort of Well, she's all the rage and decluttering. She's the number two book on Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, you know, it's a serious stuff. But I'm not a minimalist like her. I'm not a minimalist. I like my stuff. I just it's now better arranged. I'm able to have photographers in. I mean, I was not willing to let the super in, and now I have photographers in. And now I have, what do you know?
Yeah.
On there. The phone.
Right, somewhere in there, too. Not an effect for the writing, because it's sort of like your setting, though, too, when you're writing. So any change?
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? The stuff has actually started to impede my writing.
Oh,
It was too much. You know, I mean, I actually, I'm not someone who's one can be various on this stuff. One isn't a dogmatist. I like having a clear little space to write in. And actually, if I had my druthers, honestly, I'd have another small, quiet, clean room with a nice view to work in and have all my lovely stuff, you know, my napkins that you disparage.
No, I'm not disparage. I bet they're great napkins. For you.
That's true.
They're great napkins for you. Okay, Barry?
That's a good title, actually. A great napkin for me.
Before we go any further, I got to tell you that Stephanie Lee here, who's our announcer on the show.
Hi,
she's
Barry.
New with us. She's like your biggest fan. She loves everything. She has several of your you on her nightstand. Say hello, Stephanie.
Come again, Mike, will you?
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Tell them that what you like.
Well, I just wanted to say I really do love your writing. Your book, Wearing Dad's Head, is one of my favorites. One of my perennial favorites. I always read it when I'm home. So,
well, that's really, really sweet of you. And one of the challenges you can imagine is that when you write a memoir, I've never write nonfiction, so I'm used to being very confessional. But I mean, Wearing Dad's Head is totally autobiographical, but it's all disguised, right?
Right.
All in a mask.
Right.
So now I'm sitting, and to write Mess, I had to take away the mask. So it was a bit of a challenge, but I miss my fiction. I want to get back to it. I really love it. It warms the heart to hear you say that about Wearing Dad's Head.
Well, I look forward to reading more of your fiction in the future.
Great. I look forward to churning it out.
Barry, I'm afraid we got to flee at this point. I want to say the book is called Mess. One man struggled to clean up his house and his act, and I want to say it's a really great pleasure talking with you.
Mike, same here.
Right. Barry Yergrau, ladies and gentlemen, from Queens.